I have a proposal for you guys. It's working so well in digital control that I thought I'd see whether I should try it in here. Does someone of you guys want to grade the homeworks? You know, you get pay. Austin wants to do it. You can if you want. That would be great. You want to do that? Oh, cool. Yeah, right. All the homeworks go to Austin. Austin is the official grader. Sweet. Yeah, no, that's great.
It's going to be a real struggle, man, but...
Yeah, you just got to pay him enough and you'll get 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe only 2 points. How's that?
Okay, so the last day we had this problem, right? You can see this problem. And so what I'm doing today is I'm helping you do this problem, right? This is actually a very important problem because this is what happens when we have, you know, some lines on a circuit board and it goes to something, right? And that's what happens quite often. Suppose this was even like a digital circuit. You know, you got your... You know, your output of some inverter or driver or something here, and this is the input to some, you know, whatever you're sending the data to, right? The receiver, or, you know, the might be another inverter or something. Who knows? But you have this all the time, okay? So that in a digital circuit we have that kind of thing, and then we have this kind of thing in analog circuits too. In analog circuits, generally, instead of thinking of in terms of unit step functions like we did last day, remember we were talking about unit step functions flying down the line and so on. In analog circuits, often we break things down into sinusoids or approximate sinusoids. Like say, for example, you know, if I'm thinking about my ham radio, I have a transmitter and I put a transmitter, turn it on, and it's got a transmission line, goes up to the antenna, and this is the antenna, okay? And I approximate that when I analyze it as my transmitter being a sine wave. Now obviously my transmitter isn't just a sine wave, because if it was, it'd send no information. Or actually sometimes I actually do that, just put it on as a sine wave just to check and see how the reflections are coming back. But that's just because, you know, it's an easy thing to do. I could also, you know, check the reflections when I'm talking if I wanted to. So that's what we're going to be looking at is, you know, when you send a wave down, we found out there's, you know, likely to be some reflections here. And how does that work? And furthermore, what we'd really like to do is we'd like to replace this whole transmission line with the load, whatever it is, with a Thevenin impedance, so that we could figure out what's going on down here, right? If I have a source here with a source impedance, if I could just replace that with a Thevenin, it'd be good. And we actually did that yesterday, but we had an infinite line here, and so this Thevenin impedance we figured was Z0, okay? But it's not likely to be Z0 when we put 100 ohms on there and the Z0 is 50, okay? So that's what we're trying to do, and this is actually kind of a cool thing. Because it occurs in so many places. In fact, one of the even bigger things that I'm trying to do to get you guys in gear for is this. We've been always thinking about things in terms of voltage and current. But when you get to higher frequencies, it's much more productive to actually think of things in terms of waves. And so I'm trying to get you geared up so that you can think in both ways, okay? That's even like more important, because if you can see the waves, if you can see what's going on, and hopefully we'll be able to kind of, quote, see what's going on, you know, after a little practice, it will really be good for you. Because when we're making circuit boards, for example, you know, there's traces on there, and you need to kind of see what's going on with those traces in you know, kind of an electromagnetic way. In fact, that's even a little bit broader than this transmission line thing, because the transmission line is kind of waves in one dimension, but there are actually, you know, three dimensions that we're dealing with, right? So it helps to be able to have an idea about how that works. So I've drawn a little picture here. of a transmission line, I'm assuming we know the characteristic impedance and the phase velocity. That's equivalent to knowing the L and the C, the inductance per meter and capacitance per meter, and I'm going to assume this is, you know, lossless. Or approximately lossless, okay? No, I'm not getting a lot of losses, okay? So I can do the lossless case to begin with, and, you know, later we could add losses in if we want. This is it, but I want to do something that's, you know, kind of simple. Now, somewhere back here, I'm going to have, you know, the generator, okay? So really what I'd like to do is I'd like to make an equivalent impedance looking in here, Z, and this will be, this I'm going to call this minus Z here, Z of minus Z, okay? Because, you know, this is a negative, you know, maybe I should call it minus L instead of minus Z because I've got Z as the axis. So Z of minus, I'll make it minus L. Z equals minus L. Okay? And the reason I'm trying to find that is because then I can replace this whole mess with a Z at minus L and hook it up to my circuit here, whatever it happens to be, and I can solve it. Okay? But that will be kind of the next step. I just want to do this first. So what I want to do is I want to call this point right at the end of the line, I want to call that Z equals 0. The reason I want to call that Z equals 0 instead of the beginning of the line at Z equals 0 is that 0 is a very handy place to apply boundary conditions. In other words, we also do that when we're doing differential equations in time. We usually pick T equals 0 at the point where everything starts, right? And it makes the differential equation solving for those coefficients simpler because when you put 0 in, it makes those exponentials go to 1, and that makes life easier, okay? So that's kind of what I'm doing here. You don't have to do that, but this is kind of standard operating procedure, okay? So last day, we came up with V of Z, and I'm going to go back to the phasors. I mean, it wasn't last day, it was a while back, so maybe we should go look at this. This was V plus times E to the minus. In our case, it's going to be J beta Z because alpha was 0, because it's lossless, right? And that's the V plus term, but then I also have a V minus solution. V minus, this is a phasor. When I put a bar over it, that means it's a phasor. And then I've got E to the plus J beta Z. And so this was the voltage. And the current, we also had a solution which was very similar. It's going to be I plus times E to the minus J beta Z plus I minus E to the minus J beta Z. And we had a relationship between I plus and I minus, I mean I plus and V plus and I V minus and I minus, and it basically said this, I plus was equal to V plus over Z zero, right? That was the definition of Z zero.
I think the second term in the I is positive.
I got the wrong thing there, yeah, thank you. Okay, good, thanks for fixing that. And I minus is equal to, it's going to be what? Minus V minus over Z zero, right? Remember that? Now I can plug these guys, these two guys, in right there. Okay? And so if I do that, I of Z will now be equal to, it will be equal to V plus over Z zero times E to the minus J beta Z plus, no, minus, right? Minus V minus over Z zero, E to the plus J beta Z, which I will leave it as that. So now there are really two constants that we're looking for, V plus and V minus, right? And those V plus and V minus, the are going to be related to the two boundary conditions, one back here at this side and one at this side, right? I mean, just like in, you know, regular time differential equations, you know, you got two conditions at time t equals zero. Well, in this case, we got two boundary conditions, one over here and one over there. Okay. And this is a linear circuit, so let's just remind ourselves of this. So that means something. So what happens if I'm thinking back in terms of the U of t's that we did last day, right? If I put a U of t on this side, it's going to travel down the line at the velocity vp, right? And the ratio between the v plus and the I plus will be z0, right? When that U of t hits the end of the line here, then something happens, because the total voltage across this guy, you know, that's the voltage here is V of zero, and the current here is I of zero. Now, if I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, time, a unit step function, if I put one volt across here, right, and this was, say, 100 ohms or something, the current would have to be 1/100th, right? But if this Z0 was 50 ohms right here, the ratio of the forward-going voltage to the forward-going current was only 1 over 50, right? Does that make sense? In other words, when I came down here with the V plus and the I plus, it comes screaming down the line, the ratio is 50, Z0 here, okay? Then when I hit the end, this ZL being different than 50 requires a different ratio, right? So how do we get that different ratio? Well, it turns out, you know, there are two solutions. You know, there's the plus and the minus solution, right? So what that does is it actually generates a reverse going wave so that the total voltage to the total current, if you measure it here, the total V to the total I, is now going to be this ZL, you know, 100 ohms instead of 50. So really what's happening is there's a wave coming down here, and we think of it, it's like being reflected, right? Because it wasn't absorbed. If this ZL was equal to the Z0, then it would just be absorbed. In other words, it would be the right ratio, right? And so we wouldn't have to have a reverse going wave generated, because the total V to the total I matched the load resistor, right? Does that make sense? Okay, now when we think about this in terms of sine waves, of course, these sine waves are in sinusoidal steady state. This is a phasor, right? So in reality, we're not thinking about the transient thing, the thing that went down there and came back. What we understand is that in steady state, as we're sending this sine wave down there, there's a steady stream of reverse going waves coming back at us, okay, in the steady state. Just like when you send down the unit step function, you know, and you keep sending it, it keeps coming back to you, right? Does that make sense? So we're thinking about it in terms of phasors here, but we can use the same kind of idea. And the idea is that the forward-going wave is the input, and the reverse-going wave is the thing that comes back. I put in a forward-going wave, I get back a reverse-going wave, okay?
But they won't be the same.
They won't be the same. Well, they might be the same, depending on what I put on here for a load resistor. Like, if it was a perfect reflection here, then it'd be the same, right? In other words, to send it down, comes back, you know, kind of like a mirror, right? So they would be the same in that case, but in other cases, you know, it wouldn't be as good. Wouldn't be as much reflection coming back, or maybe you don't want reflection, maybe it doesn't, you want it to send it down and it stays there, right? I mean, it's kind of a thing when you address a letter to somebody, right? Just put it in the postal box, and a week later it comes back to you and you go, oh man, what did I do wrong? You know? Anyway, so what we've got is we've got an input and we've got an output. Right? That means there's a kind of a transfer function between V plus and V minus, right? And so what I'm going to say is that is that, so at zero, at z equals zero, at z equals zero, by the way, this term is just v plus over z zero, and this term is just v plus, and that term is just v minus, right? So this whole thing right here just becomes v plus at z equals zero, and that becomes v minus at z equals zero. So at z equals zero, we could say that v minus equals some transfer function, which I'm going to put here gamma of omega. This is a transfer function. Times the input, which is v plus, right? Now, gamma is what we call the reflection coefficient. You know, it would be zero if ZL equals Z0, just kind of by C to the pants, right? It seems like there shouldn't be any reflection there. And it would be something else if ZL is something else other than Z0. Does that make sense? And this is a linearity kind of a thing, you know? The output is proportional by the transfer function to the input, right? This is a linear system, just like we're used to. It's just like a thing, except now, instead of using voltage and current as our input and output, you know, if we had an impedance, we put current in and we get voltage out, or if it's a conductance, we put voltage in, get current out, or, you know, you could also put voltage in, get voltage out, or whatever. Now we're putting a forward-going voltage wave in and getting a reverse-going voltage wave coming back, okay? And, you know, this is gamma, it's a function of, really, it's a function of two things. Omega, and this is at z equals zero, right? Because that was right at z equals zero. So it's going to depend on what frequency is. And why does it depend on a frequency? Well, because the z load here is probably going to depend on frequency, right? It might be a capacitor or an inductor or something, right? And it's at z equals zero right here, right? That's the reflection at z equals zero. We could then look at gamma of z. We could say v minus e to the plus j beta z, that's, I just took that guy right there, is going to equal, and let's actually try and find out what is the ratio between v minus and v plus. I wonder what happened to our eraser. I guess I'm not allowed to make mistakes today. Okay, well, we'll just do it this way. V plus e to the plus j beta z. Is there one? Oh, there is. Yeah. Okay, cool. Back in. Okay, so I want to do just, we've already got this. So what is the ratio of, What would be the gamma if I was back here at some z? Well, wouldn't it be this term divided by that term? I mean, you know, this implies here that gamma of omega and z equals zero is going to be equal to, it's going to be equal to just v minus over v plus, right? Oops, I got the plus kind of high there. So what would the gamma as a function at gamma of omega and z would be equal to? Well, it would just be equal to the ratio this guy divided by that guy, right? So that would be v minus, oops, minus e to the j beta z over v plus e to the minus j beta z, which is equal to gamma at omega and z equals zero times e to the j 2 beta z, right? Because this guy comes up to become another one of those guys, and then you got two of them, right? Okay, so now what we could do is we could take this v of z and this I of z and rewrite them in terms of the with the gammas in there, okay? And then what I want to do is I want to say that the impedance anywhere along the line would be the voltage, the total voltage, divided by the total current. In other words, I take this thing divided by that thing, right? That'd be the total impedance, the total voltage divided by the total current, right? And that would give me, well, I could find maybe gamma by looking at the load here, right? Because the really gamma, by introducing this gamma, I kind of decoupled the boundary condition here from the boundary condition there. And then once I get gamma by applying the boundary condition here, then I can get Z anywhere along the line, which is what I'm after down here, right? Does that make sense? So we'll just quickly do that. So V of Z equals V plus over Z zero times e to the minus j beta z, and then I'm just going to do like this, 1. That guy times 1 is this first term here, okay? And then I'm going to put plus gamma, and I'm going to make this gamma sub L. And over here, I'm going to define this guy right here as gamma sub L, gamma at the load, okay? That means that z equals 0, okay? So I don't have to keep writing this whole mess every time, okay? So gamma sub L times e to the j 2 beta z. Let's check and see if that works. So if I take v plus times gamma sub L gives me v minus, right? And then, no, there's no over z zero. This is not the current. I just need v plus. That'll come in a minute. Okay, so now I've got v plus times gamma gives me v minus. E to the minus j beta z times e to the j 2 beta z gives me e to the j beta z, which is what I've got over here, right? And if you look at this, we're really taking this whole thing, you can kind of think of this guy right here as v plus of z, right? Mm-hmm. And this guy right here would be v minus of z, right? And so this gamma, this is really v plus of z divided by v minus of z, right? Okay, well, that's kind of why this is, this right here is the gamma of z, right? Right? That's omega and z, right? I'm just going to kind of leave the omegas out because all the v plus and the v minus, all that stuff is going to be a function of omega, you know? Everything in phases is a function of omega, right? So I've got that. Now let's do the I. Okay, so I of z is going to equal v plus over z zero. That's the I plus. And I've got e to the minus j beta z. And then I'll have 1. This times 1 gives me the first term up there, right? And then I'm going to have minus, and it's going to be gamma sub L e to the j 2, well, not beta, 2 beta z. And then this guy times that guy gives me that other term up there, right? And now I can take and divide this equation by that equation, right? So z at a function, at a place z equals V of z divided by I of z, which equals, well, if I divide this guy by that guy, the V pluses divide out, e to the minus j beta z's divide out, right? The z zero comes up on top. So I get a z zero, and then I end up with this 1 plus gamma sub L e to the j 2 beta z, and 1 minus gamma sub L e to the j 2 beta z, right? Is that okay? Am I in the way here? So now we can find out what gamma is by doing z at 0 equals z load, right? Apply the boundary condition, right? So that equals
Z0 times 1 plus gamma sub L e to the 0, right, over 1 minus gamma sub L. And doing a little algebra here, I got ZL over Z0 equals 1 plus gamma L over 1 minus gamma L. So that implies 1 minus gamma L. Let's do it this way. 1 minus gamma L times Z over Z out over Z0 equals 1 plus gamma L. So I got gamma L times quantity. I've got to grab them over here. So I've got one of them there, and then when I bring this guy over here, it'll be plus ZL over Z0, right? Equals, and I'll bring all the other stuff over here. I got ZL over Z0, this times that, and then I'm going to bring this guy over here, so it's just minus 1. So gamma L equals basically ZL over Z0 plus 1, no, minus 1, minus 1 over ZL plus over Z0 plus 1. And we could define this as Z normalized minus 1 over Z normalized plus 1. Or we could also write it by multiplying by Z0 on top and bottom. It would be ZL minus Z0 over ZL plus Z0 if you want. So now, if we know what ZL and Z0 are, we know what the reflection coefficient is. If we know what the reflection coefficient is, then we can find the impedance at any point along the line, and you're done with your problem. Okay? So do you have any problem solving that homework problem now? Okay. Now that you got your homework done, what I want to do is I want to think about this gamma, because this gamma is extremely, extremely important. It basically tells you can see if you know what gamma is, you know what the impedance is, right? And of course, the impedance has kind of been something that was kind of important to us. But in reality, the gamma is just as important, because knowing one gives you the other. And actually, gamma is something that's a little bit more close to the physical reality of what's going on, because it tells you how much is reflected back. And that's something that actually is going to be maybe more important to you than what the impedance was. Okay? And so I'd like to just explore this gamma as a function of z for a couple of funny business, see what happens if there's any funny business going on here, just to kind of get a feel for it. And then what I'd like to do is I'd like to notice that gamma here gamma, the maximum gamma could be, if you look at this ZL minus Z0 or Z normalized minus 1 over Z normalized plus 1, if you examine this thing carefully, the magnitude, any complex number you put in for Z normalized, the magnitude of this guy is never going to be bigger than 1. In fact, it makes sense, because you see, if it wasn't that case, I mean, I put something down here and I get more back than I put in, right? Which might be a really good deal. But, you know, nature doesn't do that for us. It's fair, you know. You never get more than you paid for, right? I mean, you know, it's an energy anyway, you know. Energy is neither, you know, I mean, you can't get more out than you put in. It's one of those kind of deals, right? So when you look at this guy, if you examine this thing right here, you'll find out that the magnitude of gamma is always less than 1. And since gamma is just as important as the impedance, what that does is that tells us we could make a plot that would encompass every possible load you could put on there, right? By graphing gamma, you know, on a big circle, right? And we need to look at that plot, because that plot is called the Smith chart. And you can see so many cool things by understanding the Smith chart, okay? And so that's where we're going next. But
we need to do just a little bit of thing so that you can see that there's some funny businesses that happen that will make, you know, you take note, you know, this whole business maybe was worth worrying about, okay? So, I'd like to think about, first of all, a thing called a wavelength. We haven't really talked about a wavelength before, but, you know, if you have a forward-going wave on this thing, right, and it's traveling, you know, down the way, if we take a snapshot in Z, you see a sine wave on there, right? And one wavelength is the amount of distance it takes, you know, to get 2 pi, right? So what I'm saying is that, you see, let's look back at our notes here, and you'll kind of remember what we had maybe a little better if we look at the notes. We had right here. Do I have to plug in? I know. Can't get wireless in here. I gotta plug in. Okay. Tiny dinosaur, yeah, all right.
Oh,
hello. Man, I've got all these places. Yeah, I guess so. I bet I know. They unplugged me and plugged. There's only one board that works. Oh, no, I'm not plugged in at all. They unplugged me totally. Put them back over here. It doesn't work. And put me right in here. That does. Is it coming?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes. Come on. Gotta get rid of this tiny dinosaur. Ah, yes. Okay, so now. The reload button here or something. Oh, shoot. Well, where was it? Probably about back here.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Where is it? Right there. Okay, so here we are. So look at this thing. This is the picture of the wave right here. You know, you can see it. From here to here is one wavelength, right? So that means for one wavelength, I could say that beta times one wavelength, beta times lambda has got to be 2 pi, right? In other words, this thing, I have to, if to go one wavelength over, I have to advance this beta z has to be 2 pi, right? To get back to where I started, right? So beta lambda is 2 pi. So that means that beta equals 2 pi over the wavelength, right? Okay, so if we do things in terms of wavelengths, you know, we can kind of think we know what beta is then, right? Beta, knowing beta and lambda are the same kind of thing. And actually, wavelengths are really something kind of physical when I look at this thing. Beta is really what the physicists call a wave number, okay? But lambda is a little more, you know, intuitive to me than beta, but one is the same as the other, right? Sometimes beta physicists use K, you know, for the beta, but we're using beta. Okay, so what would happen, what I'd like to do is I'd like to look at case one here, examples. Let's do some examples. Okay. Suppose Z load equals 0, okay? What is z at minus lambda over 4? Okay, so I'm going to put on a short right here, and I'm going to go back here a quarter wavelength, right? Which, you know, for maybe my favorite ham radio frequency, that's 20 meters, okay, which is 14 megahertz, actually about 15 megahertz. That would be going back about 5 meters of wire, okay? Now that's a short wave frequency, but if you were at 2.4 gigahertz, quarter wavelength would be this much, okay? Not much, just a quarter wavelength, right? So if I connect this much wire, you know, to my 802.11 business there, right? What's going to happen if there's a short on one end? What do you expect the impedance to be on the other end? Yeah, it actually is. Let's just look and see. Good guess here. So what happens here? So let's look at this. What is it at the under end? So Z of minus lambda over 4 is equal to Z0, right? And then I have times, well, what's gamma going to be for a short? For a short, you can see gamma is going to be, gamma Z normalized will be 0. So it's minus 1 over plus 1, right? So for a short, and that makes sense because, you see, when I come down here with a voltage right here, and if there's a short, the voltage here has to be 0, right? That means it has to be perfectly reflected negatively going back so that when I add V plus to V minus, I get 0 volts here, right? That makes sense, right? So I would first of all say gamma at the load has to equal minus 1, okay? So I have 1 plus minus 1, right, over, and then there's the e to the j 2, what's beta? Beta equals 2 pi over lambda, right? So I've got 2 pi, or it was 2 beta z, so it's 2 times 2 pi over lambda times lambda over 4, and I have to put a minus there because it's going like that, and then I've got 1, and I've got minus a minus 1 in this case, right? 1 minus a minus 1 times e to the, and wait a minute, was this supposed to be minus? Yeah, no, it's supposed to be minus because it was down the line negatively. E to the minus j 2 times 2 pi over lambda times lambda over 4, right?
Yes.
Equals. Okay, so let's see. I've got 4 pi, lambdas cancel, right? 4 pi over 4, e to the j pi. E to the minus j pi, what's that?
Negative 1.
So that's going to be 1, right? 1 plus 1 over 1 minus 1, right? Goes to infinity, right? So I put a short circuit on there. I put this much transmission line on there. I measure the impedance there, and it's infinite instead of 0. Isn't that incredible? You can't get much further than that. And that's just two little wires. Two little wires made that big difference. Man alive, and then all the time you thought that when you put, two wires on there and, if there's a short on that end, there's a short on that end, right? Doesn't this blow you away?
No current will flow.
Yes, it means no current will flow.
What?
No, I mean, if that happened, what about, let's try example 2. He doesn't believe it, I can tell. He knows Frony has finally pulled the wool over me. He's been aching to do this all this time. He just wanted to see whether he could pull all of us. And there's only 4 in this class, and we can't. He's coming up with garbage, So there must be garbage in somewhere. Well, if that's garbage, so is this, too. Let's check and see. So if Z load went to infinity, right, what would Z of, what is Z of minus lambda over 4 in that case, right? What would that be? Well, you might guess it's 0, right? Because last time it went from 0 to infinity, maybe this will go from infinity to 0, right? Well, let's check. So, Z of minus lambda over 4 is equal to Z0. I forgot the Z0 up front here, but it doesn't make any difference because you divide it by 0, right? So I get Z0 times, and basically all this does is this changes gamma. G- gamma, the load is going to be now, well, let's think about what is it? It's infinity minus 1 over infinity plus 1. So what's that going to be? It's going to be 1. In other words, what I did was I required the current here to be 0, right, on an open circuit. If I require the current to be 0, that means this term and that term have to cancel. And the difference between this one and that one is this minus sign right here, right? So basically, it's going to give you, you know, negative what we had before. So this will be plus 1. So I can just kind of copy this same thing again, right? Except I need to change that to a plus 1, right? So it'll just turn out being, it'll be 1 plus 1 over 1 It'll be 1 minus 1 over 1 plus 1 this time instead of 1 plus 1 over 1 minus 1, right? Which is equal to 0, right? So I put an open circuit on one end and I ended up with a short circuit on the other end putting this much wire on there. Isn't that bizarre? And if that can happen, man, all bets are off as to what the impedance is, right? And so all the stuff you've learned up to this point and you've been trusting, maybe you don't trust it anymore. Well, let's think about this. Okay, maybe we really should have been trusting this a little bit, but suppose we were at, instead of 2.4 gigahertz, okay, if we were at like audio frequencies, right? You guys have been playing around with audio frequencies, or maybe 60 hertz. Let's do 60 hertz. Those are the power line frequencies, right? Let's check and see, you know, how long would it have to be? What's a quarter wavelength at 60 hertz? And if it turns out that, you know, going from the light switch to the lights is not anything close to a quarter wavelength, then maybe we're okay, right? Because, you see, if I'm right here, if this thing isn't very long right here, then the gamma here has got to be the same as the gamma back there, right? Which means the impedance hasn't changed any, right? Does that make sense? Right? So let's think about wavelengths here. So I guess I got to take pictures. What time is it? I got 4 minutes. I can take pictures and then we can figure out the wavelengths. You guys remember how to figure out frequency and wavelength? How does that work? Yeah, how are frequency and wavelength related? That's Yeah. You guys are remembering things.
Lambda equals V over the velocity of the wavelength over
F. I think
wavelength over speed.
Yeah, because that would make sense because over frequency would be times. So.
Yes. Yeah. Lambda equals V over F.
Yeah.
I think we remember that from physics.
Yep.
Well, you guys had this in physics, so you really should have known this already, right? Okay, so. All the stuff you learned in physics, it's now all coming together, huh? Well, this is light. Electromagnetic waves are light, right? This is one-dimensional, so it's easier than light. Okay, so but let's look at this thing here. We can kind of see it by this, okay? You see, this thing is going up and down in time, right?
Yeah.
So if we stop at this point and it goes flying by, you'll see, you know, as this thing moves by, you'll see it go up and down, right? Right? And the time it takes to go up and up, down once and up once, right, is the amount of time it took to travel from here to here, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a one wavelength, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the time it takes to go down and up once, that's 1 over the frequency, right? So we have 1 over frequency will be equal to the time it takes to go from here to one wavelength, right? Which is the velocity, it would be the position divided by the velocity, which would be lambda divided by the velocity, vp, right? Did I do that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then this would say Vp equals F lambda, and you guys used the C equals F lambda, right? Okay? So we got that right. Okay, so now at 60 hertz, F equals 60 hertz, how far is lambda over 4? Okay? So let's figure this out. Let's assume we're assuming the transmission lines out here, and those transmission lines, they go at the speed of light, okay? Because the dielectric between them is air, and I'll show you that, I can show you that a little bit later, okay? But or maybe we wait for you do E and M or something. Okay. It turns out the wave equation. If you look at the wave equation in E and H, instead of having 1 over the velocity, it has 1 over the velocity squares, it has 1 over epsilon mu, okay? And if epsilon is epsilon 0 and mu is mu 0, then it goes the speed of light. 1 over square root of epsilon 0, mu 0 is c, 3 times 10 to the 8. So assume Vp equals 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second, the speed of light, okay? So in that case, we're going to solve for lambda. Lambda equals Vp over F, right? Is equal to 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second divided by 60. Yeah, per second, right? Equals 60 cycles per second. 60 cycles per second. That'll give me one cycle, right? Cycles per second. Is that right? Well, anyway, I guess 1/7 is all right. So this would give me what? What's 3 times 10 to the 8th over 6? 5 times 10 to the 6th. 5 times 10 to the 6th. So that's 5,000 kilometers, right? Is that right? 5,000 kilometers? So a quarter wavelength, therefore lambda over 4 will be equal to, what is it going to be, 1,250 kilometers, right? Okay, so, you know, the Powell guys don't have to worry about this too much, okay? So if you want to be a power engineer, you can just forget everything we just said, and, you know, you don't have to worry about it. Actually, they're starting to worry about it. But most power engineers don't worry about transmission. However, radio frequency engineers, you know, guys like me, we have to worry about this all the time because if you're doing 2.4 gigahertz, that's only that far. And, you know, even at my favorite frequency, 20 meters, it's 5 meters of coax. That's, you know, 15 feet.
So
that's not very far.
Will this hold true for that?
Yes, it will. It will. So if you go 1,250
kilometers,
if you have a short circuit on one end of the line, it will look like an open circuit on the other end of the line. 1,250 kilometers. So that's about, you know, 800 miles or something. What do you mean, where does it go? It just means it won't draw any current. When you got a short circuit on there, it doesn't draw a lot of current.
Short enough that it doesn't have a chance to equalize, it's just going too fast back and forth.
No, but like, for example, if you have an infinite load,
well, I can tell you guys have a lot to think about. After all this, Frony just blew away our whole circuits class. This is no good. What is going on here? But this is very important, you know, for anything, you know, where you're getting up at very high frequency. And you guys, you know, if you're doing digital stuff, your CPU is going at 3 gigahertz.
Yeah.
Well, there's this circuit board for your CPU is this big, right? How many wavelengths is that? Oh, man. So all bets are off as to what looks like what, right? But one thing you can do is if Z load equals Z zero, what happens? If Z load equals Z zero, gamma is what? Z normalized is one, right?
Zero.
Gamma is zero, no reflections. No reflections, in which case, then all these things, this Z of Z is just gonna be Z zero, right? Oh, never changes, doesn't matter how long it is. Oh, see, they used to run, instead of this cat five or whatever it is, cat six stuff, they used to run, networking used to be run over little coaxes, RG58.
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you would put a little 50 ohm resistor on there because the RG58 is 50 ohm coax. I've still got a bunch of 50 ohm coax in the lab that I collected when they were ripping it out from, because they were going to cat five or whatever it was back there, maybe cat three, I don't know, but anyway, it was. So, if you can terminate things properly, it makes your life a lot easier. And so you don't have these funny businesses.
So you spend no power, but you still get the signal through?
No, well, do you get the signal through? I mean, if it's terminated in a short or an open, you're not going to dissipate any power in the short or the open, right? So it makes sense that, you have a short on one end, you put something in a quarter wavelength back there, and it won't draw any current, right? Well, there's no power going, so it's still consistent, right? It's still not dissipating any power, right? Because there's no current going in instead of, the voltage being zero. It changed from no current going in to voltage being zero, but there's still no power. I don't know. Go think about it. This is pretty cool. It's pretty bizarre. Yeah. So every time you think you have it all figured out, there's something new. Right?
Calculus. Calculus that way.